Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Disney Reel to Reel, a deep, deep, deep delve into the Disney animated canon. I am Wyatt, and today we're going to start with a damn history lesson. Okay, let's go. William the Conqueror, whose cause was favored by the Pope, who was soon submitted to by the English, who wanted leaders, and had been of late much accustomed to usurpation and conquest. Edwin and Morcar, the Earls of Mercia and Northumbria, declared for him, and even Stigan, the patriotic Archbishop of Canterbury, found it advisable to go with Edgar Atheling to meet William and offer him the crown. William's conduct, at first, was moderate.
I feel like I'm more and more speechless every time we do an intro. I'm Rayleigh, and this is always a surprise. I wish I was kidding, but I'm not.
For anyone who didn't know, I was just quoting the passage from Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, where they talk about William the Conqueror.
Yes. You should have done it in a really bad Cockney accent.
I mean, I still can. The day is still young.
We're not going to do that again.
William's conduct at first was moderate, but the insolence of his Normans.
Please. Oh, it's so good.
Thank you. Oh my god. We're off to a great start. Hello, everyone. Today, we're going to be talking about an Alice in Wonderland, a Disney Alice in Wonderland that never was. It's from 1939. And how are we vibing? Let's get the general vibes. How are we doing?
Vibes are good, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel it was really interesting getting to read this and like kind of extrapolate some thoughts.
Yep.
Which is what happens every time, but we're not going to talk about that.
At least not yet.
Not yet.
But before we get into that, instead of opening with a personal Disney question, Alice in Wonderland is going to prove to be a major talking point throughout this entire series, because I've made it so. And in doing so, we are going to replace it with a personal Wonderland question. And the one that has come to mind because of our recent discussions about good old Allison is, do you think that young adults like us are expected to grow out of Alice in Wonderland?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, so many people view Alice in Wonderland as a kid's story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with like all the whimsical elements, the fantasy setting, like it's seen as kids' media. And of course, you don't want to be looking at kids' media.
No, all this frilly tea parties and shit. Forget it.
Yeah. But I don't give a shit because I go and I look at it and I'm like, okay, but what about the horror?
I will admit, I'm really afraid to get into that discussion with you.
Yeah. Because I genuinely could go on for, like, a couple hours, probably.
Oh, God.
but we're not talking about that today. I would say, like, especially in, like, American society, there is, like, this, like, expectation that, like, once you hit a certain age, like, you should not be interested in, like, kiddie things anymore.
It's time to put away such childish things.
Yeah, you should grow up, you should get a job and be super boring for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But of course we have this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
and we're not doing that. So
yeah, I have
it's definitely gotten better in recent years, but
yeah,
there is still like an expectation.
Yeah,
I'd say
that as well. I mean, Alice has come across in like various counterculture movements across the century, but
as she should, our rebel queen,
absolutely. But I really think it was the 2010s that made her like trendy.
Mm-hmm.
And for better or worse, the Tim Burton movie played a massive part in that.
Mm-hmm.
Cause Hot Topic sure loves its Wonderland shit.
I still see Hot Topic merch with, you know, We're All Mad Here.
Mm-hmm.
To this day.
Yeah. The time is over, and yet it's still everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I bet you could get away with that until, like, 2016 or whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I think, honestly, since we're both diagnosed with, like, mental disorders and things like that, it's like, I think we are the perfect group to, like, really get into this and, like...
See, we're not the intended target audience, but we are the target audience.
Yeah, and plus, we have to keep in mind that, like, ideas about mental health in the Victorian period were drastically different than ours today.
Very different.
But even still, it's, like, the fact that we are depicted as being these, like, fabulously ridiculous people.
I mean, I wish.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's only a problem when they turn Alice into one of those, like, not like other girls energy.
Yeah. I think that was my main problem with the Burton films. Like, whenever I was younger, I liked them, but, like, now that, like, I'm older, I look at it and I'm like, wow, that's a little misogynistic. Because let's be real, like, the not like other girls phenomenon is definitely internalized with misogyny. Mm. So.
Is it the line from Game of Thrones where they're like, oh, some girls are singing the songs of John Q with flowers in their hair, and then the one lady's like, those girls are idiots.
Yeah, it's like, okay, some women like doing very feminine things, some women don't.
Yes.
And that's fine.
That is okay.
Stop hating each other.
Oh, yeah. Also, one more thing. I think it is also... It's weird how Alice is such a simple, straightforward story, and yet I feel like it can represent a lot of things, both old and new.
Yeah.
And I feel like, especially these days, considering how absurd our political climate is, I think it's prime fodder for analysis and comparison.
Indeed.
Like, putting someone on trial just because they've stolen the Queen's tarts. It's akin to building a wall.
Same thing.
Same thing. Same thing. And yet people wanted that in power. Okay.
It's like, okay.
Okay. So, without further ado, let's get to talking about this madness. You had not seen this version of Alice before. I'm safe in assuming.
I have not.
Yeah. I found out about this firsthand because of there was a documentary on some early like DVD edition of Alice, and they showed off some of this artwork that we'll be talking about. And then I got curious about it because I started reading up on like reviews on various editions and stuff. And it turns out that there's so much stuff that the Disney home video division does not put out on DVD or Blu-ray anymore. And we are at a loss for it. Like, you literally have to own a Laserdisc player to, like...
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. But in particular, there was this line in the 90s called Disney's Exclusive Archive Collection, which featured titles like Mary Poppins, Tron, some black and white Mickey Mouse cartoons... Saludos Amigos and Three Caballeros, and Alice in Wonderland. And I, of course, own the latter two because I need all the, as much information as I can get. And those two are wonderful. I'd recommend them if you want to invest in prehistoric technology. Yeah, that's where I found out about these. And I was like, oh my God, who is the biggest freak I know? Let's bring her on. We can be freaks together.
So, that's the goal.
That is the goal. But yes. So, I actually don't know how to go about this because I've been trying to get another guest on to do more of like the historical analysis and context analysis and stuff. So I was thinking that this one could be a bit more like creative and like analytical, but not in a way that's like, Walt, what dis? But I guess some general stuff to share would be that this is the, what is it? It's the third attempt that Disney made at making an Alice film based on Lewis Carroll's story. It is the second time that they wanted to do something animated. And it's the first time that they actually wanted to make, like, an animated feature film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, otherwise, you know, in 1938, that's when they really wanted to push this version out. They were like, you know, we are the tits right now for making Snow White. And we're in production on Bambi, Pinocchio, Fantasia. How about we tackle another classic of literature? And it turns out that Alice was actually a project that lots of audiences and critics wanted Disney to make. And it was his first idea for a feature, but then Paramount beat him to the punch, and we'll talk about that someday.
Yes.
So then he went ahead and was like, Snow White is cool, make that, made over $8 million.
Just casually. Casually made over $8 million.
Yeah, and you even had people like Russian filmmaker Sergei Eisenstein calling it the greatest film ever made. Yeah. Also, Hitler loved it.
Of course he did.
Of course he did.
He loved animals.
And the eugenics part, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, oh my God. So at this time, you know, he was producing a lot of titles in development. So there was stuff like The Wind in the Willows, Cinderella, Peter Pan, Alice was jammed in there as well. And basically, the vibe was that Walt believed that this story was very funny and it should retain its English origin.
He was very adamant that it had to stay funny.
Yes.
that's like all he talked about. He was like, it needs to stay funny. You guys aren't getting it. It needs to stay funny.
Yeah. 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 A passage that we read in preparation for this involves him asking some very like deep philosophical questions. Yeah. He's quoted as saying, what makes people laugh? Why do you laugh at a story? Stop and think. We don't laugh at silly things. Think of anything you've ever laughed at that you thought was funny. Analyze it, and it is somebody involved in a predicament that you're in sympathy with and that you have experienced or heard of other people experiencing. There's a direct connection, no matter how screwy. Unquote. And the reality was that no one else on his story team thought this story was particularly funny.
Yeah.
They all thought it was weird as fuck.
Which, to be fair, it is.
It is weird. It is very weird. But they were going off in different directions of, like, you know, Dorothy Ann Blank. She was the only female story person on Snow White. She raised the point of whether Alice should be, like, a modern American child or not. And Walt responded, quote, she'll be English. We won't let the English think she isn't, unquote.
Please.
And then they threw around ideas of, like, the croquet game being replaced by a football game and stuff like that.
I mean, wasn't there Wasn't there, like, in the thing where, like, Walt said that, like, he didn't want, like a Donald Duck scene in the film because of, like, the football game?
Well, he didn't want those style of gags in there.
Yeah. Like, Donald Duck gags. Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah. He wanted it to be, like, specifically English. Judging by how he phrased it, I'm assuming he means, like, Victorian humor.
Yeah.
And I don't think they were willing to research that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pushback. And my response is basically, Rayleigh, have you seen Disney's Return to Oz?
Return to Oz. That's the one with the Wheelers, right?
Yes, it is.
Yes, I have.
Okay. Then the best way to summarize this draft of Alice is if the MGM Wizard of Oz and Return to Oz had a baby. Like, it has all the visual splendor of the MGM movie, but all of the darkness of Return to Oz.
Which is certainly a clash.
Definitely.
I think. That's hard to reconcile. Those are two very different visions.
Yeah. Especially when I keep hearing people talk about stuff like, you know, they love Return to Oz, but they also love the Gregory Maguire book Wicked. And then people who love the MGM Wizard of Oz love the musical Wicked. So it's just weird that in a way Disney found the formula to blend the two and nobody liked it. Anything else? I think that was all the big stuff that doesn't involve, like, super detailed information, which I hope to get into in a later episode. But, how do we go about talking about this?
I have no clue, bro.
Okay. Here's an idea. So I shared a link with Rayleigh a couple weeks ago about this podcast that ran from 2013 through 2018, I believe. It was called the Gameable Disney Podcast. They did an episode on the 1951 Alice and how to convert it into tabletop role-playing systems.
Oh, yes.
And, me being a noob when it comes to that sort of thing, like, we have yet to start our own campaign, and that's fine. Yeah. I'm not going to hold grudges. It's fine. But I guess the question that I wanted to raise by sharing that with you was, do you think that this version has superseded the 1951 version as your Alice in Wonderland? Because knowing you and your love of horror, I was like, this is right up your alley.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I'd probably say so, because as much as, like, I know that, like, this version probably wouldn't have been, like, as tonally consistent, I think I would have liked, like, the more, like, the darker themes more.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have liked seeing, like, more out there artwork.
Mm-hmm.
So even though the story may not have been as strong, I probably would have liked it a lot more. And honestly, in the versions of Alice that I prefer, it's usually because they have, like, something more going on. It's not just traveling through Wonderland.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, dangerous question. Do you think it's that takeaway is enough for us to put Alice off the number one spot?
No.
No?
I still love Alice.
You still love 1951.
I still love 1951. It's like, I mean, like, I still love it. Do not get that twisted.
Okay.
I still love it. It's just personally, my interpretations of like Wonderland and stuff, I prefer it to be like have like a more like darker undertone. But I also do just love like the whimsy of the 1951 version.
Okay. And this isn't an either or thing. It's just like, I was just thinking like, I think the 1951 Alice is more my style.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really funny if we're probably the only podcast ever where it's like, there are enough adaptations of a particular story that is like, this story is this guy's energy. This story is this person's energy.
Yeah, and if we were going to get into like my favorite like iteration of Alice, it would be like American McGee's Alice.
Yeah, I could never.
If for all y'all American McGee Alice fans.
I could never.
If any of you actually know American McGee's Alice, that's probably my favorite. Still so sad about the failed asylum version. I'm so mad.
Oh my God.
But it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, give me Mary Blair like any day. I cannot handle. I can handle this story being weird. I can handle it being surreal. But I can't handle it being creepy.
Yeah. And I love when it gets creepy.
I can't do it. I will spontaneously combust. But yeah, I guess I did actually share some questions with you via text.
Yes.
Bring those back up.
I have my answers to them written down.
All right. I do not have my phone in front of me right now.
I do.
Okay, thank you.
I can read off the questions.
All right. Maybe we could do like a plot chronological type thing. And considering it's Alice in Wonderland, it's like we all know the basics, but I'll just point out the little nuances and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So, see, we would open and we find Alice chilling on the riverbank with her cat Dinah, playing around with flower crowns, the OG Lana Del Rey. But then the white rabbit shows up, and then Dinah becomes anthropomorphic.
It's like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and the fact that, like, that happens in the real world, it's just like, where does Alice's dream start and reality ends?
Yeah, it's like, why would you have that happen before she goes into the burrow? Like, that's strange.
Yeah, but then also, like, why would you have the white rabbit in a waistcoat?
Yeah.
But then that's a Lewis Carroll problem. That's not a Disney problem.
Yeah, that's a
problem.
Lewis Carroll problem, not a Disney problem.
And then I guess the most interesting thing that this version has to offer is that it gives a Disney Alice, like, a plot motivation for following the rabbit. Instead of just, you know, I want to pursue him because I'm curious about where he's going. Now it's that he's going off to some party held by the Queen of Hearts and she wants to know what's up. Because she's never been around royalty, I guess. She's of low breeding, something. And then she falls down this really insane rabbit hole that has bats and shit.
Yeah.
And this version is all about the menace and just letting Alice know that, like, you've done fucked up by even following this fucker. And, like,
You made a stupid fucking decision.
Yeah. Because they're literally like, the queen is going to kill you. And she's probably like, what queen? What the fuck? I'm still free falling. Like, what? It's weird.
Yeah.
And then she would come across this hall of doors. But it's this really interesting art deco thing going on. And there's a talking bottle instead of a doorknob. And in early versions of like demo reels and stuff for this film, his voice was provided by Cliff Edwards, who we would know as the voice of Jiminy Cricket. So you would have loved him. Yeah.
Jiminy, when I catch you, Jiminy. Jiminy, when I catch you, Jiminy. Jiminy, when I catch you, Jiminy.
Oh my god. And then he offers her the drinks of, like, eat me, drink me, growing and shrinking, yada, yada, yada. And then she falls in the pool of tears, and she comes across some mice and birds and stuff, and they all do the lobster quadrille. It is shocking how many times they tried to make the lobster quadrille, like, a thing in their drafts.
It's like, no. Just accept it, no. Yeah,
no, it just has nothing to do with anything. And then she would have come across the Cheshire Cat. And
we all know the Cheshire Cat.
We all know the Cheshire Cat, but not like this. Oh my
not
god.
Not this one.
That was the stuff of nightmares.
I kind of liked it.
I can handle him in small doses and far away from the facing the camera. No close-ups, please. But yeah, maybe that's a good part to start raising the questions that I asked. What were they again?
Mm-hmm. So, let's see. Do you want them, like, in order?
Yeah. Let's do that.
Okay. The first one, does this version of Alice put more attention on Alice and or Wonderland?
I think it's too early to answer that, yeah.
Yeah. Does it depict the lighthearted or dark side of imagination, as we argued over in our final rankings? Is there any character or sequence from the book that you wish would have been represented in this version? Are the mad characters treated with respect or ridicule? Is Alice's adventure in Wonderland emotionally satisfying or trivial? And then last one... most relevant to our campaign, what would your Wonderland look like?
Okay. We'll save the campaign stuff for the end.
Yes.
And I think the closest one for us to answer will be the mad characters question, since we're about to reach the tea party.
Yes.
Oh my god. I would have assumed that your favorite part of this entire movie would have been when she approaches the Mad Hatter's hat shop, and there's all of those heads of, or those busts of him, just their eyes are just following her to the door.
It would have been entertaining. But I also wonder if it would have been too close to, like, dolls for my taste.
You know? You still draw the line.
Like, I can handle, like, some, like, statue stuff, but, like, sometimes it just gets too close to doll.
Mm.
Like, if it was a mannequin, I'd be like, ugh.
Yeah.
But statues sometimes I'm okay with, but sometimes I'm not, so.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I'm looking at the video. We actually did skip some stuff.
Oh.
After she's talking with the cat, who does some weird appearing and disappearing shenanigans...
As the Cheshire Cat is wont to do.
Yes. I believe she meets the caterpillar next.
Oh, she meets... Okay. Yeah.
All of the events from the book are all jumbled up in this version, and it makes it even weirder.
Yeah, it's... it's strange.
Yeah. I don't think they spent too much time on this. I think it was just, like, he's just there to service the guy who's, like, takes some sides of the mushroom. One will make you grow taller, the other shorter. And then she scares a bird family.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about this version is that Alice grows and shrinks the way she does in the book, which is that her neck elongates or comes down to the ground, yeah, and, like, she's just a little stumpy.
It's not, like, proportional.
No.
Growing and shrinking.
Nope. Which would have been really weird. Like, really, really weird.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if, like, they didn't want to mess around with that, partly because with the neck stuff, it might look a bit phallic.
Yeah.
So maybe we don't.
But also they, like, I mean, in the 1951 version, didn't they keep that one line where it was like the bird was like, oh, it's a snake, but like
serpent. Yes.
Serpent. Yeah. But like, you know, Alice is growing proportionally. So that line makes no sense.
No, it don't.
But like, of course, with like the book and then in this version, it would have made sense because it's her neck that's growing. So she would look like a serpent or some kind of serpent. Yeah.
And I suppose you don't eat eggs either.
Oh.
Oh my god. That's going to be a moment.
Oh, Alice. And your English accents.
That's not even her.
I know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm saying like Alice, like the movie. Okay. Like, Alice in Wonderland, your English accents.
Yeah. So wild. But then after she gets the knack of growing and shrinking... Well, first off, she meets off with this random centipede.
As you do.
I'm looking at the drawing right now, and it looks fucked.
I hate centipedes, so I bet it does. I'm not good with bugs.
yeah, I don't like it. We already talked about some shit on the skeleton dance. We're not going back.
We're not going back. No.
But then she's still tiny. She's checking out this puppy. And people keep thinking whether this is actually, like, in the book or not, and I think it is. That she, like, messes around with a little puppy dog.
Oh, yeah, I think it is.
Yeah. And then the Cheshire Cat pops up again to, like, freak the dog out. And then he advises her to go meet the Mad Hatter and the March Hare.
There
they're both mad.
Yeah.
And then we get to that head shop with the creepy doll heads. It feels weird to ramble on through this stuff because we haven't really, like, given any time to Alice. And I don't want to take for granted that, like, some people may not know the beats like we do, but, like...
Yeah. But also, this is Alice in Wonderland.
This text is, like, over 160 years old. Like,
yeah. Sorry, spoiler warning.
Spoilers no. for Alice in Wonderland.
Wonderland.
But yeah, I guess the big thing in this sequence is about the Mad Cat characters being, respected or ridiculed. And, let's just say, as far as I know, there is only one song that was written for this movie. And it was a song called It's Crazy to Be Sane.
Mm-hmm.
Let me pull up the lyrics. Hold up.
Oh boy. Strap in.
Strap in, kitties. Where is it? Hold up. The lines were to go. Oh, it's crazy to be sane. Never ever you use your brain, or you soon will find your mind behaving like a hurricane. It's much smarter to be dumb. If there's trouble, let it come. When you fuss and fret, who do you get? The sanitarium. You are smart if you're dull. When the world's so full of brains, it makes you individual. Oh, you never have a pain if you're balmy in the brain. What you don't know can't hurt you. Oh, it's crazy to be sane. And I have a feeling this song might have been the thesis of the movie. I don't know.
I'm literally speechless. Okay. Sorry. I know the whole point of a podcast is to not be silent.
But you're shell-shocked.
But I'm literally shell-shocked by what I just heard.
Yep. So these people, they're ridiculing the...
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. That's like the kind of song that, like, I would think was edgy as, like, an 8-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, it's not. And also, why? why y'all, like... Oh my god. I have so many thoughts, I don't know how to put them into words. I mean, okay, yeah, we agree on ridicule. Because, like, yeah, the understanding of mental health has certainly come a long way.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that is absolutely what a, like, neurotypical person would think it's like being mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like.
It's not that we are different because we are biologically different. It's because we're dumb.
Yeah, like we're dumb or we are willingly like ignoring reality or something. It's like, no.
No, sir.
There's something biologically wrong.
Yeah.
And so our perceptions are literally affected.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's rough.
Yeah. And what's worse is that I feel like all of these scenes, they would probably begin in like a really like maybe cheery, upbeat manner. And then as soon as we get to the end of each sequence, then there's like this dark undertone that pops up with each one. It's like you go to the mad tea party. These guys are like wacky and messing with a rabbit's pocket watch, putting jam in it and shit. But then they turn towards Alice and they're like, your hair needs cutting, or like, you can't walk around with legs for too long.
Yeah, it's very like, threatening. That's not the kind of dark undertone that I like. You know, like, I like when it makes sense and it's not at the expense of, you know, mentally ill people.
Yeah. What's the line? The March Hare says, you can't go on day after day with your feet dangling way down below your ankles.
Yeah, it's like, that's just, one, that's over the top. Mm-hmm. Two, it's like, it's such the stereotypical representation of a mentally ill person. Like, oh, 1 minute they're happy and go lucky, but then the next they like just like there's like a switch.
And they want to kill you.
And they want to kill you and they're evil. And it's like, that's no. So, yeah, that's not great.
No, and that's probably why they don't talk about these early versions as much, because they're either like focused on whether to adapt the book more literally or not, but also like these discussions of mental health are not up to date.
Yeah. It's very rough.
Very rough. But what does she do next? She actually hides under the tea tablecloth. And it's really weird how it's...
Under the cloth?
Yeah, she hides under the cloth, and I guess she shrinks or something?
Okay.
Because then she ends up with the gardener. And okay. Then that's by the White Rabbit's house.
Yeah.
And apparently Marianne is a real character in this version. Just in case anyone was wondering.
Just in case.
Every time, they're like, who the hell is Marianne? Well, now she's like a... Oh, what kind of animal was she?
Oh, isn't she... Is she a rodent?
I think so, yeah.
Is she a mouse?
Yeah, probably a little English mouse.
I think she's a mouse. Yeah, I think she's a mouse.
She's like, oi, governor, I swear I found your gloves in your room. And then they have a whole thing about Alice being giant inside a house, and then she shrinks again. And then... I believe she visits the Duchess, the cook, and the baby next. And I'm shocked that this was a sequence that they were initially thinking about depicting.
Yeah. That is one of the wilder sequences from the book.
Yeah. Speak roughly to your little boy and beat him when he sneezes. He only does it to annoy because he knows it teases. Wow, wow, wow.
It's something. It's
something. And then he turned into a pig. Then he ran away.
He did.
And then Alice makes her way to the Queen of Hearts palace, where the card soldiers are painting the roses red. But they can't be the only people working on this garden. They have to have an entire menagerie of anthropomorphic garden utensils to, like, clean this shit up. And I was like, okay, it makes sense. Like, you know, they're developing Sorcerer's Apprentice at this time, and they had the whole house cleaning scene in Snow White, so, you know, they haven't run out of that energy by this point.
Yeah. I still want large crews of anthropomorphic creatures.
Yeah. But it's like, it got weird in some sketches, because I think they had these, like, two hoses that were spraying each other, and then they made out.
Oh. I don't remember that.
It was there, I swear to God. Do you think I would pull that out of my ass?
I don't know. I believe you. It's just, I don't remember.
Okay, cool.
Maybe I blacked out.
Blacked out. I didn't see the hoses performing cunnilingus or something. And then the Queen of Hearts would have shown up with her husband, who is not a chibi in this version. And then they would have played a game of croquet. And then they would have actually had an executioner in this version.
Wow.
Did you not see? It was the guy that had, like, the big black mask and the cape. And
yes, I do remember. It's just, it's like, I remember all of this. It's just, like, I have it out of order, I think, in my head.
Yep. That makes sense.
Because, like, I think I'm wanting to, like, remember it as, like, the correct flow of events.
Ah.
And not the weird jumble that this has it in.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
So I'm just, like, I remember this happening. It's just, I'm like, oh, I thought this happened later.
But then I actually don't know why they would have immediately gone to a trial unless they were going to the book and being like, oh, the Knave of Hearts, he fucked up by stealing her tarts.
It's like trial.
Trial now. they still play all the beats. Like, they bring the Hatter and the Hare in to testify and they get nowhere. Mm. And then they put Alice on the stand. Yes. And I'm sure she probably would have badmouthed the queen or something.
As usual.
But then there was a bubble cannon that would have gone off.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I don't know why.
It's like, why would that happen?
I don't know. I should add that, like, this was accompanied by a script from May of 1939, but it dipped off by the time we made it to this part of the movie. So yeah. It was literally just sketches. Also, the Cheshire Cat would have been a member of the jury.
Oh.
He has a powdered wig on.
That is kind of funny, though. I gotta give it to him. That's pretty funny.
That's weird.
It's, yeah, because, like, the fact, like, it doesn't help that it's, like, just sketches, because you're looking at it. And you're like, what is happening?
Yeah. And then we get to the incredibly dark portion of the film, which is where Alice gets pursued through the castle by the queen. And she ends up in a torture dungeon.
Yes.
And there's a man literally being hung. Like, holy shit. And then she would have been heading across all doorways in and out of the castle, and then the queen would have caught up to her, and then we would have seen a cat being lynched.
Which is horrible, by the way.
It's horrible, but they thought about it, so.
I'm like, why would you even think about that? That's awful.
I don't even know if that's the Cheshire Cat or not, but.
If it was the Cheshire Cat, he'd be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm seeing the sketch right now. Oh my god. I can see the stripes on him and stuff, so,
yeah,
so holy fuck.
It's fine, he'd be fine.
He'd be fine.
He'd be fine.
And then there's another cat that's clapped in irons and has their feet inside the, what's that thing that, you can see it at Disney World in Liberty Square, it's like that thing you put your head in To make it look like you're...
Oh, the, it's on the tip of my fucking tongue.
You go there to get your photo op inside the thingy?
Yeah, and you get locked inside of it. Pillory.
Yeah, that.
Yes, it is the pillory.
All right, the pillory, but it's for your feet. All right, bro.
I'm so glad I looked that up because I needed that. I was going to lose my fucking mind.
Oh my god.
If I didn't find it.
Oh my god. But then, the very end of this movie would have been Alice strapped to a board with God knows how many leather belts. And she's placed under a guillotine. And then the queen would have been standing right on top of the blade to decapitate her.
Which is fucking insane.
It's insane!
It's insane.
And it's like 30 feet tall. Like,
yeah, it's wild.
Insane. And then it looks like she wakes up just before her head's gone. And then
that's pretty typical for a nightmare.
Yeah. But then I guess she's supposed to be like, "Oh, Dinah, there's no place like home," or something.
Oh, so we're quoting Wizard of Oz now.
Not literally, but
yeah,
I think that's
it'd be that kind of moment.
Yeah.
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 Honestly, it feels like. The ending of this would have felt, I think, way less satisfying than even the one from the 1951 version.
Yeah.
Because it extra feels like there's no fucking point.
No. And it's so not funny.
It's not funny. Not funny.
I guess the only other thing we forgot to mention was that Dinah was supposed to turn into the Cheshire Cat. That was her Wonderland avatar, I guess.
Oh.
Yeah. So Dinah, stay away.
I'm sorry. I like the Cheshire Cat as being just a separate weird fucking entity more.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. We just had to get all of that out of the way, but what were the other questions again?
Okay, other questions we already answered.
We did have the one about whether this focused more on Alice or Wonderland.
Oh, did we answer
no,
that
we did
one
not.
Too? No, we did not. Okay, yeah. We can just start with, does this version of Alice put more attention on Alice or Wonderland?
I think... it is really hard to make Alice interesting. That's what I'm learning through all of these. It's like...
yeah. Because, I mean... I don't want to say it again because you already called me out for saying it so many times. But she is a child.
She is a child. Oh my god.
Alice is a child, so... it's hard to relate to her as, like, an older person. It's way easier when you're a kid.
Yeah.
But she is a child, so she doesn't have, like, a fully... developed personality.
No, but I mean, we don't even get a sense of, like, what her life is like before she heads down the hole.
At least in, like, the 1951 version, you get, like, she has, like, something to do. Or, like, something she should be doing.
I guess, but it's like...
and she clearly has a life because there is, like, another person with her. You know, like, it's not great, but it's something.
I don't even think it is something, because, like, I guess part of the thing in converting it to a Disney film would be, like, Alice has to want to go there.
Yeah.
And in the movie, the 1951 movie, we don't get a sense of, like, what motivates her to want to go.
I mean, she's bored.
Yeah, that's it. And I don't think that's particularly strong.
Yeah.
But they were obviously very concerned about how to, when to deviate from the book and when to do their own thing and stuff. And I guess that's mm-hmm. something that they wanted to stick to. And they suffered for it.
Yeah. Sometimes changing a creative vision is okay.
Not in 1930, whatever the fuck. We still have all those Victorian babies being like, Mr. Disney, you will be doing all of England a great disservice should you fail to adapt our English literary classic. And he's like, yeah, but I'm Disney.
He's like, yeah, but I'm Disney. Yeah.
So honestly, I think they should have been more audacious.
Yeah, I definitely think they should have. I don't think they should have gone as off the rails as they did in this version, but yeah. I do think they could have done more than what they did with the 51 version.
Yeah.
They could have made it dark. But like not without, like within reason.
Like maybe we don't need to see Alice get decapitated.
Maybe we don't need the March Hare threatening to cut off her feet.
But maybe we could have something kind of ominous in the Tolgi Wood or something.
Yeah. Maybe we could have include the Jabberwock, you know? Maybe it's some kind of weird entity like the Cheshire Cat. We can just make it like the mind of a child.
Mm-hmm.
And that's scary on its own, because children misinterpret a lot of things, mm-hmm. and they see it as scary. So, like, it could literally just be that, and it would work. Yeah.
Which really makes me wonder, like, if we were to take the Alice in Wonderland story and remove Alice from it, and remove the Victorian English bullshit, would we find it as interesting?
The hard part with that is that Alice is the reason we even get into Wonderland in the first place.
Yes, but I'm saying today, if somebody really wanted to get all fanficky and make an original character...
So if it was like a different character.
Yeah, different character, different environment, different everything. Would we find it as interesting?
I think I would, because, I mean, it would be an exploration of someone's mind still.
Yeah.
I personally would find that still interesting. Even if it wasn't, like, well-written, I think I would still, like, find some interest in the fact that, like, it's somebody's interpretation of their own mind.
Yeah. Like, maybe instead of, meeting up with adult figures at a tea party, it could be, like, an episode that represents the child's interpretation of the internet.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm sure there'd be a lot of, like, television screens, because, I mean, a lot of people were, like... Honestly, what would be really interesting if it was, like, done through the perspective of, like, one of those kids who's, like, was, like, part of, like, a family vlogger, like, situation. Because it'd be, like, people watching you all the time. You know, like there'd be constantly be eyes on you. And, like, that would be, like, a really interesting, like, exploration of, like, that kind of...
But then you'd expect them to be, like, vlogging about really crazy things.
Yeah.
Like, we as a family are all going to dive off the Grand Canyon on a bungee cord and spring ourselves back up or something.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, you see what I mean, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, it would still be very interesting, at least to me.
Yeah.
If, like, there was a different character that explored it. And it honestly might be nice if it was someone with, like, you know, a little bit more personality.
Maybe, yeah.
But, I mean, I feel like it could still work, even if it's someone just reacting to what's happening around them.
Mm-hmm. We just have to get to know them first. Yeah. That's the big thing that Alice is missing. We don't know a lot about her.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what was the personality description that they raised in this outline? What did it say? Alice, well-behaved, well brought up English child, like,
yeah,
I want to read the whole thing. Well brought up English youngster of 6 or 8, usually polite and soft voiced, but full of fun and high spirits, given to occasional outbursts of defiance and temper, should have an interesting kid's voice, not flat or wishy-washy. Possibly a female Freddie Bartholomew combined with Jane Withers, or role might be played by an older girl with a childish voice, not too girly-girly. Should be able to sing pleasantly, but not too professionally. And you have no idea who Freddie Bartholomew is, do you?
No. I do not.
Yeah, so that would have made it even more dated. Holy shit.
Yeah.
But what were you going to say?
But that feels like so, like... that feels so average.
Yeah. I don't know. But then again, we have to... we should probably raise, like, do we think we're asking too much of Disney with that?
I'm sorry, could you repeat yourself?
Curtsy while you're thinking. It saves time. Do you think we're asking too much of Disney if we were wanting to, like, make Alice more, like, complex?
I don't think so.
Because I don't know if their main goal was just to adapt or anything. Because if we're thinking, like, female characters around this time, we've got Snow White, Cinderella...
mm-hmm.
They're not totally fleshed out.
No, but you do also get a sense of, like, what their life is like.
Mm-hmm.
The people around them.
You know what they want.
You know what they want. Like, they have, like, tangible goals.
Yeah, that's true. Even if it's all wrapped up in, like, this abstract, like, dreams and wishes and...
yeah. Which is, I mean, it's an early Disney film, so, like, I don't entirely blame that.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not, I don't think it's unreasonable to at least give Alice a reason besides just boredom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe we don't know what her family's like, but if she had some reason for exploring Wonderland, maybe I would be into it more.
Yeah.
Or, like, you would feel more invested in her journey.
Yeah, I mean, really just think about it. Like, this was being developed as The Wizard of Oz was coming out.
Yeah.
And we know all about Dorothy's deal. We know, like,
that she
fucking hates Kansas. Nobody's listening to her. Everyone's taking her dog Toto away from her. So she's like, you know what, bitch? I want to go over the fucking rainbow. Like.
Yeah.
But for Alice, because they were afraid to deviate, they just gave her the same bland motivation.
Yeah.
No, wait, let's do the lobster quadrille for another 10 minutes. All right, what were the other questions?
I think this would be a good point for, is Alice's adventure in Wonderland emotionally satisfying or trivial? I think that would be I think this is a good point to address that question.
I'd say it's... I don't want to say it's trivial, but it's not satisfying either.
Yeah, like, it's very middle of the line.
Like, we don't know if she comes out at the end like a different person, which mm-hmm. doesn't help because the last thing she remembers is being decapitated. I wouldn't be surprised if she just woke up from the dream and just started screaming back to her house.
Like, yeah.
Mother! Mother!
Mummy!
Mummy! And she's like, now, Alice, your lady, please curtsy. Now, very well. Now, what do you have to say for yourself?
Like, I was decapitated, Mummy. My head came off.
I really was. And there was this bunny who was in a waistcoat, and then these two men wanted to cut my legs off.
And Dinah was there too.
And she had a lot of teeth.
She had a lot of teeth. And it's like, My daughter is crazy. My daughter is crazy.
Send her to the insane asylum.
Send her to the insane asylum. Oh, hey. Hey, it's Return to Oz again.
It's Return to Oz. But it was true, Annie M. It was really happened. Dorothy, it's been 8 months. Go, you need to sleep.
The parallel.
Yes, yeah. And then, wasn't there that scene where they had all of those, like, really mentally ill people stuck in the basement?
Probably. I wouldn't put it past them, probably.
I believe so. Like, there were all those shrieking voices, and then the storm happened, and the power went out. And then she got let out of there
by,
that
sounds about right.
Who was it? Ozma? Or something like that?
Yeah.
Anyway. Next question.
No question.
Sentence first, verdict afterwards.
Well, I mean, technically I didn't give my answer, so. I mean, like, what I basically said was, like, it's not very satisfying if you look at it from, like, a very literal point A to point B. If you look at it through, like, a more, like, narrative, like, journey rather than, you know, just the story of Alice, it's a little bit better, but it's still overall, like, not perfect.
Nope.
But yeah, that's my answer.
I believe that as soon as Walt saw it, the like a reel, he was like, maybe we can put this to the side for a while. I think everyone is burnt out.
But also, let's not forget there was a fucking rager that happened
that
in
too.
Europe around the same time.
That too. But I don't know how much that had to do with this Alice.
I mean, I know at some point they had to shelve it.
They did. But, like, I don't know if the war had much to
do with
it.
Yeah, I don't know if it was this version, but there was definitely, like, they were working on Alice and it had to be shelved.
Yeah. Yeah.
They
actually worked on it, what was it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 5 or 6 times, if you count the 30s one.
Yeah. That's wild.
6 times. They even brought in, like, psychoanalysts. They brought in... Do you know a guy named Aldous Huxley?
No.
He was an English writer. He was known for doing the screenplays to, like, MGM's Pride and Prejudice and other movies based on English classics. And they had him come in to do one for Alice, but he made it, like, very literary and, like... It became more about Alice and Lewis Carroll, and, like, I think they were like, that guy cannot imagine a cartoon. Like,
for real.
That's the guy behind Brave New World, by the way, in case anyone was wondering. I might devote an episode to that, because there's research done on it,
Okay, we did that one. We did that one. Does this version depict the lighthearted or dark side of imagination as we argued over in our final ranking?
Oh, honey.
I think we've talked about this one already, but
it's dark, but I don't know if we've related it too much to, like, the imagination.
Yeah, it feels like it's dark in imagery, but not because of, like, the whole imagination thing that I was talking about.
If anything, it's more like it's that way, like, in service of the audience.
Yeah, it's dark for the sake of being dark.
Yeah.
Rather than because there's, like, any, like, actual, like, emotional reason to be dark.
No. Aside from the fact that they all thought this was weird and made them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
They were like, let's ramp that up if that's what he wants. And it's not what he wanted.
And then it's not what he wanted.
He was like, be funny.
Yeah, he's like, be funny. And they're like, well, I mean, the parts you find are funny are
really,
like,
fucked up.
Weird. So I guess we'll do more of that. And then he's like, no. And they're like,
okay.
Then what do you want?
Why don't you take a seat, Walt?
Yeah. So, like, I don't blame him.
Yeah.
And then I think we've addressed. Oh, wait, no, sorry. Is there any character or sequence from the book that you wish would have been represented in this version?
Well, there are three glaring things that are cut out of this one that get put back into the Disney version.
Mm-hmm.
We're losing the Tweedles. Mm-hmm. We've lost the Walrus and the Carpenter.
Yes.
And they kind of toyed around with putting the Jabberwock in there, but then they backed out of it.
Yeah. I would have wanted the Jabberwock.
Yeah. From what I've gathered, he probably would have been a bit goofier than you would like.
Yeah. Upsetting.
Yeah, but...
very upsetting.
Yeah, and as far as I know, that's the only version that they thought about putting him in. The 51. Yeah.
Sobs.
Yep.
Sobbing, crying, throwing up.
My God. I'm crying into my teapot. Tastes like rejection.
Drowning the Dormouse in my teapot with my tears.
Oh my God. I don't know why they thought the lobster quadrille was cool.
Yeah.
I'm still stuck on that. Why? It's literally just sea animals dancing around. I hate to think that that's what you think a Disney movie is. Just like, full of animals dancing. And garden utensils making out. But like...
Garden utensils making out. Now that's a band name. Tell me that isn't good.
Let's see. Panic at the Disco, My Chemical Romance, garden utensils making out.
Utensils making out. Fits right in.
Oh my God. What would our lead single be called?
Red Roses.
Cabbages and Kings.
Cabbages and Kings. Make a whole EP right now.
Geyer and Gimble. Eat me. Yes.
Eat me.
That's our punk emo anthem right there. Eat me.
Yes.
Yes. Call me up, fueled by ramen.
But yeah.
All right, we're losing the thread.
We're losing it. We're losing it. The bit's gone. Yeah. The bit's gone.
But yes, before we get to our final question, we have to do something fun because I don't know if this has been particularly fun.
I've had fun.
Okay.
And it's my opinion that matters. I'm kidding.
I know. Oh my God. We're talking about our campaign.
Yes.
What would your Wonderland look like?
Okay, so I thought long and hard about this. I was like, so personally, as a GM, I would try my best to build Wonderland around my players. So
okay.
It would depend on who's playing who. It would depend on character concepts. It would depend on backgrounds, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were playing Alice and if I were, you know, the source, let's say, of this Wonderland, personally, I would want it to have like some of that darker undertones that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I would still do my best to make it as whimsical as possible because I think it's really funny to have, like, you know, the untold horrors of the human mind, but also some guys who just like to rhyme when they talk. I think that's really funny.
Do you think it would be a really funny scene if we followed those cards who were threatened to have their heads cut off, but then as soon as we get to the guillotine, somebody pops up from a corner and they're like, you're pardoned.
Yeah, Yeah, like, I think that's hilarious.
Okay.
And I would probably want to do something like that. And I would probably end up doing something similar for if I was creating a campaign for my players. I would do my best to make it fun while still feeling interesting.
What do you think your idea?
That's usually my style.
Yeah, of course. But what do you think your original character concept would be?
My original OC, do not steal.
Yes.
Let's see.
I had one, but it was like very basic.
Yeah. I would say if I made a version of Alice, I would probably... I'm going to go with like D&D terms, since that's what I'm most familiar with. But I would probably build like a barbarian. Because like the whole thing with like Alice, and you see it in the 51 version, is that she's very emotional. And I feel like that could play really well into like a very emotionally unstable person.
So you want Alice the Barbarian?
I want Alice the Barbarian.
Okay.
I think that would be great. And of course, that's assuming that there would be like combat in this campaign, which there may not necessarily be. Like, because there are differences with like if you want a campaign with combat or if you just want it to be roleplay focused, which is absolutely valid. I love role playing. That's like the whole reason I got into like D&D and stuff.
Yeah, a lot of interpersonal stuff.
I love melodrama. Okay. The best thing in a campaign is when someone is like acting out like someone dying in their arms. And then there's just 15 million memes being sent in the meme chat. It's the quintessential roleplay experience.
Oh my god.
Like, I mean, I was literally like roleplaying a panic attack and someone kept sending in the meme chat, like Ray holding back tears, us, like a stupid fucking like meme.
Yeah.
I was like, please. I'm trying my best here.
Jesus.
But that is like part of it. But like obviously like other options for like player characters would be like, you know, characters like the White Rabbit, the Cheshire Cat. I think Twiddledee and Dum could also be possible like character concepts, especially if two players agree to like work together, to be Tweedledee and Dumb. I feel like that could work really well. And of course, like you got like the Mad Hatter and the March Hare. I don't know if I would want those to be PCs, player characters.
Especially not these two.
It would be an option, I think. And then of course you could be a card soldier, because I think that'd be kind of funny.
Yeah, it's really hard to come up with OCs, surprisingly, for this. Yeah.
But like once you get like a solid grasp on like what your Wonderland would be, I feel like it would be easier to make up a character concept, because then you're able to visualize the world that they would be in, and then you could be like, okay, how would my character make sense in this world?
Yeah. And it's hard because, you know, there's so many fucking Wonderlands out there. It's like you have the modernist look that we have in Disney's 1951 film.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Tim Burton one. You have the fucking Hallmark one
from 99.
You've got the silent films. All that
stuff.
You have
like the live action TV show that Disney did.
Yeah, there's just so many.
There are a lot. So it really does come down to, it would come down to a conversation between the GM players deciding what they want and like
I'm sorry.
Get that out. Or leave it in, it'd be funny.
Oh god. I mean, I already left a burp in my Snow White episode, so yeah.
But like it would come down to a conversation, and that's the main thing that a lot of things come down to. It would be discussing what everyone wants and, you know, trying to figure out what would work best and what would feel like most comfortable with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think that wraps up my thoughts pretty well.
Should we go ahead and ask our final question? Because I mean, they did make an Alice, you know, so
yeah, we can go ahead.
All right. How do you think 1939 Alice in Wonderland influenced the way the Walt Disney Studios produces films to this day?
I mean, it never got made, so...
No.
That is the whole point.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it obviously influenced, you know, how they ended up making the 1951 version. Obviously, they ended up cutting back on, like, the more out there elements. Garden utensils making out was...
Yeah. I don't want to run that campaign.
Yeah, I don't want to run that campaign. And obviously they didn't include, you know, stuff like Alice in the guillotine.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they still included, you know, some interesting things. And they included other stuff from the original book that, like, they didn't in this version. I guess what I'm getting at is that... Alice ended up becoming, like, the kind of movie where, like, they don't go outside the box that much. Mm. You know? They stuck to Lewis Carroll's vision pretty consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't waver much. So I think that kind of sticking to the original followed them a little bit, but I don't know if it had a huge impact, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
If I worded that correctly.
Yeah, I think I understand what you mean. Yeah, this movie I don't know if it would have been very good.
Yeah, certainly not funny. I don't think it would have been good. Very not funny.
Yeah.
Maybe Walt would have found it hilarious, but I would have hated it.
No, I don't even think he found it funny. Like, he...
Oh, right, yeah, he kept rejecting it because it wasn't funny.
Yeah.
Not funny!
Not funny, yeah. Groovy, baby! Oh, my God. But... Yeah, I guess that's probably a good enough takeaway right there. It's that if you're making a Disney movie, don't be afraid to be funny.
At least make it funny, dude. If you're gonna make a movie, at least make it funny. Like, especially if it's a Disney movie.
Yeah, but like, Disney movies also have other things going for them, like really nice art, maybe a good voice cast. Maybe a killer mm-hmm. soundtrack. But this one, it seems like you put it on that pendulum and like the two weights are humor and darkness. Darkness outweighed the humor.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't know if I can say they even nailed it for the 1951 film.
Yeah.
Because instead of being dark, it was just more pretty.
Mm-hmm. They certainly didn't quite hit the balance. I still love the 51 movie, though.
Yeah. So, yeah, it just remains a neat little discarded nugget.
I was about to say nugget.
We are reading each other telepathically.
That tends to happen.
Yeah. Especially with neurodivergent people.
It does.
Yeah. Well, any final thoughts on 1939's Alice in Wonderland?
It was an effort.
It was an effort. Gold star.
Gold star for effort, guys. I don't blame y'all for not understanding what Walt wanted.
Yeah.
Because, bitch, I wouldn't have understood either.
There's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
For real.
Oh my god. But yeah, I guess that concludes this chapter on Disney Reel to Reel. What next? I really thought that we would come out of this being like pumped up, like energized, like, yeah, I'm feeling really good about life, instead of being like,
I mean, oh. I feel pretty good. I mean, I thought this was fun.
Yeah, I just, I don't know. I think I was looking for something. And we got it, I think.
Mm-hmm. But also, to be fair, this isn't like a, it wasn't a complete thing.
No.
It was like bits and pieces that like we are doing our best to analyze. So I don't entirely blame you for like coming out like not as pumped as we would be if this were a more complete movie.
Maybe the pictures need to move.
Maybe the pictures need to move, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
That's okay. They need to be like the damn portraits from Harry Potter.
For real.
All right, so until next time, y'all can reach out to us at disneyreeltoreel@gmail.com or on Instagram at disreeltoreelpodcast.
You can also reach us at disreeltoreelofficial.tumblr.com.
All right. Well, until then, Alice in Wonderland, how do you get to Wonderland? Over the hill, or here, or there, I wonder where. Have a magical day.
Bye-bye.
Speak roughly to your little boy and beat him when he sneezes, and he can thoroughly enjoy the pepper when he pleases. Bow wow wow, mew mew mew, the pepper when he pleases. Bow wow wow, wow wow wow, the pepper when he pleases. Bow wow wow, wow wow wow, the pepper when he pleases. Wow wow wow, wow wow wow, the pepper when he pleases.